I also know all living entities, but me no one knows. Who brought his purport? Here the question of personality and impersonality is clearly stated. If Krishna, the form of the personality of Godhead, or Maya, material, as the impersonalists consider him to be, then like the living entity, he would change his body and forget everything about his past life. Anyone with a material body cannot remember his past life, nor can he foretell his future life, nor can he predict the outcome of his present life. Therefore, he cannot know what is happening in the past, present, and future. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, he cannot know past, present, and future. Unlike the ordinary living human being, Lord Krishna clearly says that he completely knows what happened in the past, what is happening in the present, and what will happen in the future. In the fourth chapter, we have seen that Lord Krishna remembers instructing Vibhishan, the sun god, millions of years ago. Lord Krishna knows every living entity because he is situated in every living being's heart as a supersoul. But despite his presence in every living entity as supersoul and his presence as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the less intelligent, even if able to realize the impersonal Brahman, cannot realize Sri Krishna as the Supreme Person. Certainly the transcendental body of Sri Krishna is not perishable. He is just like the sun, and Maya is like a cloud. In the material world we can see that there is the sun, and that there are clouds, and different stars and planets. The clouds may cover all these in the sky temporarily, but this covering is only apparent to our limited vision. The sun, moon, and stars are not actually covered. Similarly, Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord. By his internal potency, he is not manifest to the less intelligent class of men. As is stated in the third verse of this chapter, out of millions and millions of men, some try to become perfect in this human form of life, and out of thousands and thousands of such perfected men, hardly one can understand what Lord Krishna is. Even if one is perfected by realization of impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma, he cannot possibly understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, without being in Krishna consciousness. Vedaham samatityani vartmanani charjuna pavishami tubhutani mam tu veda nakaschana. Arjuna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me no one knows. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vidana Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Bhajarane Nirvishesha Shunivari Paskyadhyaya De Sadharana. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has said, Pachamantani karmani nimbanandi dananjaya udasinadvarasinam asatyam teshu karmasu. That all this work cannot bind me, I am ever detached, seated as no neutral. And what was that work? He said in the previous verse, Prakritim swama dishtaya. Prakritim swama adishtaya sambhavamya. Nice chapter. What's that?
That's 4-6.
No, this is a different verse. Prakritim swama vashtadhyā vishvijāmi punak punak putagramamivam kritsnam avasham prakritir vishat. Again and again, the cosmic creation is coming about, and again, it's becoming destroyed. The whole cosmic order is under me, under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will is annihilated at the end. In other words, Krishna has explained that he is the judge as Paramatma in everyone's heart. And he knows without knowing everything in the past, then it would not be possible for Krishna to give fair judgments in the present. Krishna would have to know perfectly what every situation is in order to make all these arrangements. So here he's saying he knows everything about all the different arrangements that were made in the past, so he can make all the arrangements in the present. And he also knows the outcome of whatever we're doing in the present. He knows what he's going to reward to us in the future. Otherwise, it is not that God is sometimes gets confused, can't figure out anything, just like a juggler when someone's juggling balls up and down. If you add too many, after a while you get confused and you drop a few. But that doesn't happen with Krishna. Sometimes even someone like Yamaraj once, when Manduka Muni, he was arrested one time because some thieves came into his ashram when the police constables were chasing him. And then they fled from his ashram and the police came and arrested Manduka Muni. And they were going to execute him by taking a lance and pushing it up his backside. Quite a painful experience. So Hoja Maharaj told me that there was one king in Transylvania. His name was Count Dracula. You've heard of him? So Count Dracula, he had his method of killing his enemies. He'd exactly do that. He'd put them on a stake, backside up, till the stake came out their throat. Rather, and he'd do that to his enemies, especially his political enemies. He'd have them on the stake, squirming in pain, and he'd be toasting to them. And one time, some king from Turkey invaded Transylvania, where he was living. And he captured the 25,000 Turks that had invaded and put them all on the stake. And there were miles and miles of these Turkish soldiers on the stake. And another Turkish army came to reinforce them. And they went through miles of seeing their comrades on the stake. So needless to say, they all became very discouraged and they went back to Turkey without bothering to fight. In any case, Manduka Muni, he was about to get pierced in that way. And then the king came and said this is a mistake because he's a great sage, and they let him go. And he became very upset. Why is it that this is happening to me? So he went to Yamaraj, and Yamaraj told him that in your childhood you had pierced one ant with a straw, and therefore this is your reaction. He said, I was only a little baby. I mean, how can you do this? Then of course he cursed Yamaraj to become a sudra, and he took birth as a sudra, as Vidura. Of course, Yamaraj did not exactly make a mistake, but this is all Krishna's arrangement. But Krishna, no one can fault Krishna for what he's doing. He knows exactly, perfectly well, how the laws of karma work, and he knows perfectly what everyone has done, both in the past and the present, and he knows exactly what to give people in the future, to reward them for their present activities. And in this particular verse, this is coming after, Krishna has said, Na aham prakasha sarvasha. He's talking about all the different types of personalities, who they're worshipping, and he knows exactly what to give him in the past, present, and future. And then he'll explain, Ischa dvesha samudena. The material world works like a machine. There's ischa and there's dvesha. This is material existence. Hankering for what we don't have and lamenting over what we've lost. That's the entire material experience here. And when we're not hankering and lamenting, then we become aware of what's actually going on. Other than that, we're just being pushed by the hankering and lamentation into different types of material experiences. Basically, just hankering to become God and lamenting over the fact that we can't do it. Yesham antikatam papam jhanana punyakarma. Therefore, Krishna says that those who give up this endeavor to become God, take to the right activities to become a servant of God, then they become free from all this happiness and distress, all these dualities that accompany hankering and lamentation, and then they become eligible to go back to the spiritual world. By engaging themselves in my service with determination. So this is the, and Krishna knows exactly, he's trying, what's happened in the past. So in Bhagavad Gita, he's giving us the best advice. It is not that Bhagavad Gita has to be changed. Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita, he has a lot of practice. He's been speaking it, and every millennium since time immemorial, for trillions of lifetimes of Brahmas. So he's gotten the Bhagavad Gita quite down. And if we study it, try to understand it, then we can also understand past, present, future. Actually, Prabhupada said there is no past, present, future, even in the material world, because in the past, everyone was eating, everyone was sleeping, everyone was having sex and defending themselves. And the present, people are eating, they're sleeping, they're having sex and defending themselves. And some billions of lifetimes from Brahma, from now, people will be eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's all that's going on here. Maybe the clothes that people wear when they're eating and sleeping is a little different. The colors or the style. But basically it's the same thing. There's no past, present, future. It's simply punat punas charvita charvanana. So if we think that there's going to be a very nice bright future, we should stay around here, we're wrong. That it's the same thing will go on again and again. So Krishna is saying that, warning us not to waste our time in the material world. If you weren't in ecstasy yesterday by eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and you were in ecstasy today eating, sleeping, mating, defending, you won't be in ecstasy in a billion lifetimes from Brahma from now either. Nothing really is going to change. Maybe the quality of eating, sleeping, mating, defending is higher in the heavenly planets, but it's simply the same thing, really. It's not really that much of a difference. The same quality of enjoyment is there. And maybe in the hellish worlds the quality is a little bit less and the suffering is more. But if we're in heaven for some time, we've been already to heaven many times, we've been to hell many times, and we've been here a lot of times. So sometimes we'll be in heaven, sometimes in hell, sometimes here. If we stay around here long enough, we'll just go, just like a merry-go-round, goes up and down. Sometimes you're on the top, and you think, now I'm on the top. But in the course of time, merry-go-round goes down, and then you're on the bottom again. And you think, how did I ever get on the bottom? Will I ever get on the top again? And we're back on the top, and we think, I'll never leave the top. I'm here, I've made it. And we're back on the bottom again. So to get off the ferris wheel, Krishna is recommending the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. No one knows better than Krishna. Without someone having perfect knowledge, no one could have written a book like the Bhagavad Gita. So we should take Krishna's word, chant Hare Krishna, try to get out of here as quickly as possible. Don't be too curious what's going to happen at the end of Kali Yuga or for the rest of Kali Yuga. You can ask someone who comes back a little later to give you a report. But better off not waiting around too long around here. So, stop here. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
You said that the problem is that we're trying to become bad.
Yes.
We see in Kali Yuga many people, they complain that they can't even live their lives properly. They don't want to live in the Indian.
Yes, that's the other side, is that they're lamenting they can't become God.
It's also a problem?
Yes.
They really
people are hankering to become God, the lords. and they're lamenting over the fact they can't do it.
My English is very good.
Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Can you explain about the free will of the living entity? If Krishna knows the future, then
yes, just like if you're, probably gives the example, if you're soaring a tree, someone's on a branch of a tree and soaring the tree, and someone comes along and said, if you keep on soaring the tree, you're going to fall off. He said, oh, forget it. You don't know anything about the future. So then he keeps on soaring the tree branch, and sure enough, the tree branch falls off, breaks, and he falls off the tree. So then the man runs up and says, oh, you must be an astrologer. Maybe you can tell me my future. So Krishna knows what we've done in the past. He knows all about our reactions that are stored within us. So he knows what we're going to be forced to do in the future. We keep on doing what we're doing. Not very hard. Now if we stop doing it, take the devotional service, he also knows what's going to happen. Then we go back to the spiritual world. We engage in our service there. That doesn't interfere with our free will. If we want to, we can stay here forever. He knows exactly what's going to happen to us if we do that. Or if we want, we can go back to the spiritual world, and he knows what's going to happen to us if we do that too. So it's up to us what we want to do. Maybe Krishna knows what our tendency is now, what we're heading for. Maybe he can figure it all out. But that doesn't mean he's doing anything. Just like you know if someone pushes a button in a machine, what's going to happen. But that doesn't mean that you're pushing the button. You're interfering with a person or with a product. That's their own. They're doing it, and you just know what's going to happen. Yes. Well, that's one which I bought.
And by the way,
yes.
Down. And we were reading in the Surrender Unto Me that said that the flower day Krishna Bhushan said that he doesn't let them, you know, approach him. He could if he wanted to, but he doesn't even have the seed of the desire. Does that mean he doesn't have the seed of the desire to interfere with their free will? Or,
No, he knows it's good for them to get pushed down. So he doesn't want to interfere with the material nature. He set up the material world in such a way is that if someone doesn't want to approach him, then he makes all the arrangements that their desire is fulfilled. It's not that we should think, oh, Krishna looks at the demon and goes, oh, I hate you. I hate you. I just want you to go down and down. You don't like me. I don't like you either. I'm just going to push you down. I'm going to enjoy your suffering. No, that's not at all what Krishna is like. Krishna is always absolutely good and loving. But he knows the best thing for someone is, if they want to become like that, is to let them become like that. First of all, they'll get better happiness in the lower species of life than they'll get as a human being, and anxiety. And this will help them, this will rectify them, and will purify them, so eventually, maybe the next time when they come back, they'll get a better chance to become a devotee. Krishna set it up to help everyone become a devotee. He wants everyone to go back to Godhead as soon as possible. Yes?
But he says those people can never approach him. Meanwhile, they're in that state
of Yeah, of course. Yes?
Krishna is really hard to be known. How do anyone know him? Is it necessary to know Krishna in order to return to him?
Yes. No, Krishna 100%. Yeah, of course. A lot of people know Krishna, but they're not here in the material world. They're all in the spiritual world. There's just a few rascals like ourselves here. Most of the living entities are all serving Krishna eternally in the spiritual world. Only a very few number of souls are here. Bahava Dhyana Tapasa Putamadva Agata. Many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, lest they all develop transcendental love for me. So even here in the material world, many of the living entities have already gone back to the spiritual world. Yes?
here now that Sriyanka Yoga will be the strongest and men will be very small, biking, eating flesh. But like for preaching, we can see like people will point us that actually we are developing technology. 100 years ago there was no vaccine, no planes, no cars, and now we are so developed. So, and Prada and Amar said they will lose the ability to operate these machines.
So what are the value of these machines? What is the value of the machine? Can you eat the machine?
No value.
What's that?
No value, but it's like a sign of some intelligence.
Oh yeah, there's some intelligence. If they're really intelligent, they just throw all the machines away. Because they're useless. What is the value? The real thing that makes us happy is to eat. Isn't that right? If you starve to death on an airplane, would you be blissful? I'm starving to death, but at least I'm on an airplane. No, the real thing is eating. If you couldn't sleep on the airplane, would you be very happy? So all these cars and airplanes, they're just a distraction, really. Because, I mean, maybe the demigods, they have these things too, but they don't get this. Their airplanes are pleasure airplanes. They don't use it to make a living. But here, they're creating all these useless things that just take away the actual quality of life. The food is, the value, the quality of the food is decreased. People's go to sleep is decreased. Everything is decreased. And partly because of all this technology. It's made the world hellish. So if the aim is to become happy, it hasn't done that. It's done the opposite. Make people's lives more miserable. Yes.
We had, if I can express myself like that, we had the opportunity to fall down in the material world because a lot of causes. Why did Krishna the opportunity that to fall down so low for if we see around us people that are doing terrible things to others
apparently
free will
yeah sure. Heard,
but how can a part of Krishna
well, that's their free will actually we're not going anywhere we're always the same soul's not changing. But he is just choosing to get into the lower modes. Krishna allows that. Therefore, he's created 8,400,000 species of life to fulfill all the varieties of desires we may have. Gives us all these opportunities. Yes.
I think that Dr. Marshall, and he said that first living entity is thinking, what would it be like to serve Krishna? Then he gets to Lord Brahma and he thinks, well, what would it be like to serve Krishna as a Lord Indra? And then slowly he goes on. Have you ever heard that?
It may not be so conscious.
Yeah.
One has simply a slight desire to be the center rather than Krishna is the center. So, but service to Krishna, one wants to, and therefore, just by that slight desire to be the center, one gets a position like that. It's all very natural. It's all very gradual, but it's not necessarily you go from Brahma, to Indra. You may go from Brahma to anything's possible.
So that's the point you make. Gradually, he goes.
That's true.
Kind of populated off of different species.
Yeah, that's true. He goes Brahma. He can go back to Godhead immediately, yeah. Or if he develops curiosity, he gets the what's the like to enjoy a little bit more. Be a little bit more like whatever, then he may get implicated. Yes?
By him knowing the future, does he know when the living entity will take through devotional service?
Maybe. When Prabhupada was asked that, he said maybe. Maybe Krishna knows everything. So maybe he knows everything. But, You could ask him. Says he knows everything, the past, present, and future. So that doesn't mean he's interfering with anything. Besides that, we can't begin to understand. How can we conceive of anyone knowing the past, present, future? If you go to the ocean, look at every drop of water. Someone who knows exactly where every drop of that energy was forever, or is ever going to be. We can't. It's just our brain will frazzle after 5 minutes of thinking like that. See smoke coming out of the top of our head, trying to figure it all out. Krishna is not going to be. We can't fit Krishna into how we can conceive of things presently. Our brain is very tiny. Okay, thank you very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Pramande. Well, Satyabhama wasn't even Jambavati. I guess, not Satyabhama, he was Jambavati. So Jambavati wasn't a bear, and neither was Jambavati. In any case, he was fighting with Krishna. He was strong enough that when Prahara, the brother, had taken the jewel, the Sambhataka jewel, and was displaying it in the forest, riding on the back of a horse, when lion came and killed Prahara, brother of Satyajit, and taken the Sambhataka jewel. Shyamataka jewel is actually the Kaustubha jewel. Long story. In any case, then Jambavan came and found the Prashara and the horse that was killed and killed the lion. So then he took the jewel into his cave. Krishna was being defamed by Satyajit throughout Dwarka. And then Krishna went looking for the jewel with some of the prominent members of Dwarka, found the dead lion, found the dead horse, found the dead brother of Satyajit, and didn't find the jewel. He traced out the tracks, went into a cave, went into the cave, and found the jewel in the hands of the son of Jambavati. The nurse started to cry out, "Help, help, he's come to take the jewel." Then Jambavan appeared very angry, "You've come to take my jewel," and fought with Krishna 28 days, like two hawks fighting each other over a dead body, or like two elephants fighting each other over a mate. And they were fighting with clubs, with their bare fists, striking each other just like iron striking against a mountain. 28 days a night. And finally Jambavan said, "Well, this is quite unusual. Usually I hit someone once, they're dead. I've hit this person repeatedly for 28 days a night, and he seems to be enjoying the whole thing." Then he started to realize that this person's not quite an ordinary person. And he said, "Oh, this must be Krishna, my worshipful Lord Ramachandra." And then Krishna realized, he understood that Jambavan suddenly waking up, and said, "Don't worry." He said, "I'm enjoying this. You can hit me as hard as you like. There's no problem." Of course, at that moment he stopped hitting him and offered his respects and gave him his daughter and the jewel back. But the point is that it is inconceivable. For Krishna, everything is enjoyable. But for us, we're taking this material world so seriously, for the material concept of life, everything is miserable. It is not, and for one who's in Krishna consciousness, then the whole world becomes joyful. Purnam sukha sukhayate. Purnam sukha vishvam purna sukhayate. Prabodhananda Saraswati, he prays that for a devotee, the whole world becomes full of joy. It is only due to our material attachment that things appear to be miserable. Or so-called, it's all miserable, because even our hankering is miserable, and our lamentation is also miserable. But for devotees on the transcendental platform who sees it all as one pastime of Krishna, even these horrible things that are going on, they seem wonderful, but not in the way we may think. In the material world, we think everything is wonderful because I won, you lose. That's wonderful. And I lost, you won. That's horrible. But they understand that everything is coming from Krishna, meant to help awaken the living entities back to their original consciousness. It is not that they're not compassionate. It is not that someone comes and says, you know, my daughter died. You go, well, that's wonderful. It's not the devotee has no compassion. Just like one time, there is Gopal Bhatt and the king, Chanaka. I guess his name was Chatragupta was the king. I forget the name of the king. What's the name of the king in Gopal Bhatt's story? I think it was Chandragupta. So King Chandragupta, one time he went to his Gopal Bhatt, was his more or less comedian. He was in the Veda culture, the king of the duties of the king was so heavy, he needed a little diversion. And since everyone treated him so respectfully, therefore sometimes he needed someone to joke with. So he had one jester in the court, and this jester was named Gopal Bhatt. So he went up to Gopal Bhatt and said, Gopal Bhatt, I just had a daughter. What do you think? He said, I feel good, I feel great because I just passed stool. He said, what did you say? He said, I feel great because I just passed stool. So he said, how disgusting. He said, you know, I don't want to speak to you, you know. I thought, you know, I just told you something which is so nice and you just tell me this disgusting thing. So one day, at this time the king wasn't speaking to Gopal Bhatt anymore. So one time he said to Gopal Bhatt, because they were in a boat and rowing, so Gopal Bhatt was rowing and the king was sitting there. The king said, quick, I have to pass stool, go to the shore. So Gopal Bhatt was rowing here and there. He said, oh, that's not very good. That doesn't look very safe. And look over there, it looks like maybe some animal was there. He said, quick, quick. And finally he got to the shore and the king jumped out and came back and Gopal Bhatt said, oh, how do you feel? He said, oh, I feel so good. So he said, now you see how I feel, how I felt when you asked me? So that's the nature of material experience. Sometimes it's inconceivable how one is experiencing things on the transcendental platform, because we only have mundane experience. But for one who's transcendent, and everything is like that, so-called happiness in the material world is simply the temporary relief from our misery caused by our hankering, and the lamentation is due to the fact that usually that whatever we hankered for, we got, and we lost it eventually, which is inevitable. Everything is, whatever we hanker for, it's inevitable. So we're destined in the material world to suffer hankering, lamentation, until finally we get free from it. Come to the transcendental platform, and in that platform, then everything will be wonderful because Krishna is doing everything to help people get out of this illusion, although people are very attached to it. So as I said, some child may die, we don't say how wonderful. We understand that this person is going to be very disturbed, they won't be able to appreciate it. We say how it is wonderful. In one sense it is wonderful, in another sense their distress that they're feeling is not very wonderful. Therefore, people have to be gradually elevated or educated. The Bhagavatam won't be appreciated by ordinary persons. It's meant for those who are paramahamsas. We may not be paramahamsas, therefore we hear the Bhagavatam, and we don't always appreciate what's going on. We don't always understand what's going on. We because it's meant for persons who are beyond the material energy. Of course, it's meant for ordinary, not only just ordinary persons, but generally a special class of persons who are not beyond the material nature, but who are pure in heart enough that they don't assume they know everything. They can hear from the right source with the right attitude, and therefore derive some benefit of understanding transcendence. So from the very beginning here, a view of transcendence is being given, which is practically inconceivable to us, but which is very promising. That even in this world full of problems, that we can be happy under any circumstance if we come to the same platform that Krishna is on. Mam karmani limpanti, me karma palais priha, iti mam yobijanandhi karma bhiras nasabhadite. There's no work that binds me, nor am I attached to the fruits of my activities. The one who understands this truth also doesn't become bound by the fruit of reactions of work. In other words, our attachment to the results of our work makes us miserable. Although we think it's very important that everything gets arranged very nicely for our happiness and that all our misery is avoided, that everyone has to cooperate for this endeavor, that's called our friends, those who cooperate with me, make sure that I'm happy, my body's comfortable and happy, that all the, as many problems as possible are solved. But in this endeavor, everyone winds up a failure, ultimately. Therefore, the intelligent person learns, while trying to maintain the body for Krishna service, at the same time learning how to tolerate all kinds of inconveniences, and coming to, so one can come to the spiritual platform, spiritual awareness, spiritual vision, spiritual experience, so that everything does become wonderful. If one sees things in the proper perspective, one can develop the proper activities, which will develop the proper mood, and the proper understanding and mood, one will always be joyful under any circumstance, confident that this has been arranged for me by Krishna. That it's not some horrible thing that beyond God's control, it is not something which is bad for me or bad for anything else. Everything that Krishna does is good. As you know that story? You know the story in Spanish? Todos que Krishna hace es bueno. No, escuchar. You know, that's, everyone knows that story of how the king was in the forest one day with his minister and how his finger got cut off, and then everyone knows that story. So that everything that Krishna does is good. So that confidence we have to develop. If we develop that, then we'll see with a spiritual vision. We'll always take shelter of Krishna, always be inquisitive. Under these circumstances, how does Krishna want me to behave to further his interests? If we take shelter of Krishna and try to work for his interests, then the result is that with everything we do will also be good. And as soon as we lose perspective on what Krishna's interest is and forget that that's also our interest, we don't take shelter of his vision, his understanding, his mood, then we wind up taking shelter of the material nature's mood and understanding, and that will always be incomplete and miserable. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
You started the class by talking about rasas.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that the acharya sometimes strongly considered poor as being rasas. So can you clarify why sometimes the neutral rasa is considered a rasa and sometimes not? What makes it different from any other rasa?
Rasa is a combination of different factors put together. Sometimes when we talk about rasa, we're thinking that rasa means a particular relationship or whatever, but it's actually a combination of different elements known as vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, vyabhichari bhava, and sthayi bhava. So when they combine together, it's called rasa. But in the absence of one of those elements, it's called virasata. Virasata means incomplete rasa. In Vrindavan, for instance, or in Vaikuntha, you have the, say the land or the trees, whatever else, say in Krishna's pastimes. They may apparently have the mood of, say, Madhurya, rasa, because they're partaking their own Radha Krishna's pastimes, they're experiencing it. But they don't have the ability to reciprocate with Krishna in a certain rasa. So that rasa is not fully developed. It's ecstasy, they're experiencing ecstasy, but there's no apparent reciprocation between Krishna and the other elements there. Therefore it's not really considered to be a mature rasa. Although the elements of pleasure and knowledge, some knowledge may be there, but it's not complete. Therefore it's not considered. Rasa has to be complete, to be fully mature. Just like I gave the example, sweet rice means are ingredients of rice, milk, fire, cardamom seeds, and sugar. So those five elements, if one of them is not there, or one of them is incomplete, then it's not considered to be. It may be something like sweet rice, but it's called paya vas. Is that clear? So generally, shantarasa, the acharyas say, is the all the way up to the servitude, the affection given in the. Sometimes our acharyas say that servitude and affection, without the complete service attitude that's described later on, that's also sometimes not even considered to be rasa. But our acharyas say it's always the basis of rasa. It's the foundation by which rasa will develop. Shantarasa will go all the way from impersonalism all the way up to personal shantarasa. But sometimes our acharyas also include it within rasa, sometimes they don't, depending on how they define it. It's technical. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj was saying that we have to see Krishna in all our activities, and whatever happens, it's ultimately Krishna's will. So how do we have to, how can we use astrology then Krishna's service?
A lot of people don't find any problem using the Krishna or at least using it. How do you use it in Krishna's service? Just like when we say everything is Krishna's will, that means that ultimately everything is sanctioned by Krishna. And Krishna sets things up in such a way is that ultimately it's for everyone's benefit. But that doesn't mean that Krishna desires that the thief comes and steals things from him. That's not Krishna's will. Krishna's will is that everyone becomes Krishna conscious, but in the material world he's arranged it that everyone gets what they deserve, according to what they deserve and what they desire. So astrology can tell you, if just like if it's raining outside, you can't stop the rain, but at least you can take an umbrella. If you know it's raining, then at least you can take the umbrella. You won't get wet. You won't be able to stop the rain. At least you can stop yourself from getting wet. So astrology can tell you when it's going to rain. Literally. If you're good enough. What the circumstances are, then you can act, then you can arrange your life accordingly. Krishna will give you the intelligence. And we use it for devotees. It can be helpful because we only, if we're transcendental, we don't really care. I used to have this discussion with some of the devotees that the Prabhupada says in the books, in the third canto, as a matter of fact, that in the marriage of devotees, it's always blissful. So why do we need astrology? Then I point out, the Prabhupada said another point, that because people don't use astrology, therefore this, and they don't match up their mentalities, therefore there's divorce a lot of times. So how do you equate the two? Because we're aspiring to become devotees. We're not so tolerant. Unless things are somewhat comfortable for us, then it's hard for us to, things are too disturbing, it's hard for us to fix our minds on Krishna. Although the one who's very advanced, under any circumstance, they can fix their minds on Krishna, but we're not so advanced, so therefore sometimes we have to make arrangements so that things are at least tolerable for us, that we don't go beyond our capacity while we're performing devotional service that we become incapable of tolerating the situation. We have to learn a little bit at a time. So astrology is just one of the means. It's not that we only use astrology, we use so many things. We go and we ask our, we read the newspaper, we find out what's going on. We look at the weather report, we ask our friends. There's so many different ways of consulting to find out what's the best thing to do. But the difference is that the astrology is the Ayurveda, so everyone needs to consult with astrology. Out of the six different parts of Vedic knowledge, Shiksha, Vyakarana, that is, Shiksha means grammar, meter, logic, whatever. The basic principles to understand the Vedas that you have to acquire, that Jyotish is the eye. So everyone, generally in the Vedic culture, everyone consulted astrologers. Even Krishna consulted astrologers. If you have, you want any argument for astrology, you just have to see the Krishna consulted astrologer. What time to marry Rukmini, what time to marry Satyabhama, when to have the wedding. So Krishna didn't have to consult astrologers, but he did anyhow. Because he tells you the appropriate time to do different things. But when Prabhupada was asked about that, he said, that's alright. He said, if I had to do everything exactly at the right time, I couldn't accomplish anything. It's very difficult. So it may not be, for us we rely more upon Krishna as much as we can. But if it's available and it's accurate, we can use it too. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Brother Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.